Good afternoon. I'll call the Wednesday, March 11th meeting of the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development to order. And members, we have three workers' comp bills before us today, all of which passed the House, I believe, unanimously. So we'll have some testimony on these bills. I think will be pretty easy to...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can we have a consent docket?
I didn't realize there was a consent docket in the Senate.
We could amend the rules real quick.
I don't know if we could amend the Senate rules. We could amend our committee rules. But okay, so let's get cranking. So I will start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2045. And Jeremy, could you please tell us about this bill?
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2045 clarifies that a chiropractor who is serving as an attending physician at the time of a workers' compensation claim closure may make findings regarding the injured worker's impairment for purposes of evaluating the worker's disability. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you, Jeremy. And it looks like we have one witness signed up, and I will call Vern Sapo. Please come forward. Good afternoon. I know you've been waiting for this hearing for quite a long time, eagerly, so please tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vern Sable, representing the Oregon Chiropractic Association. I'll make my comments brief. House Bill 2045 simply fixes an inadvertent error last session with House Bill 2756. Which stripped the chiropractic physician's ability to rate impairment for injured workers. It was an error. A review of the legislative record found that there was no rationale for the change. It passed out of the House Business and Labor Committee unanimously. I should backtrack. It passed the Management Labor Advisory Committee unanimously, then the House Committee, and then off the House floor by unanimous vote. That completes my testimony, and
can you, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Manus Anderson.
When I read this, I couldn't figure out what you were fixing. I couldn't find it at all in the bill. I does not have good eyesight. Could you actually tell me in the bill, is it just the B in the I? That's the only...
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Manus Anderson, that's correct. It's somewhat difficult to find.
It's on page 3.
Page 3, line 4.
And that's the only thing.
Sneaky, bold print.
Well, yeah, and I think as Mr. Sabo said, this was an inadvertent omission from a change that we already made last session. So just correcting that, and I'm seeing heads nodding in the audience from the Workers' Comp Division. Any questions for this witness? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 2045? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2045, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2045.
Madam Chair, I move that we direct House Bill 2045 to the Senate floor with a unanimous do pass recommendation.
Senator Telfer moves House Bill 2045 to the floor of the Senate with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Motion carries, and please show Senator George as excused. And we need a carrier for this bill. Do we have a volunteer to carry it? Senator Prozanski? Thank you. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2045. And I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2195. Jeremy, please tell us about this bill.
House Bill 2195 is from DCBS. It changes the role of Department of Consumer and Business Services from authorizing vocational provider organizations to requiring vocational provider organizations to register with DCBS. It allows insurers and self-insured employers to voluntarily extend temporary disability payments from 16 up to 21 months for injured workers receiving vocational rehabilitation services. It consolidates statutory language relating to appeal rights and procedures regarding vocational assistance disputes. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you, Jeremy. And we have one witness signed up, and that's John Schultz. Would you please come forward? Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Schiltz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer Business Services. And we regularly review our workers' compensation law and rules to find streamlining opportunities. And this bill changes three parts of the law that pertain to vocational assistance. Basically, these changes are going to, if approved, would reduce the burden on insurers and vocational assistance providers while still ensuring that workers are protected and can quickly access their training program benefits. The first change is replacing certification with a registry for vocational provider organizations. Currently, the department is charged with certifying individual vocational counselors and authorizing provider organizations that hire them. Both counselors and the organizations must submit the same information to the department pertaining to their education, their training, their experience, as well as a plan of operations. The provider organizations can only use certified counselors, so the requirement that the provider organization provide us with separate information is duplicative and of little regulatory value. The bill would remove the regulatory requirement that the provider organization get authorized by the department. Instead, we would maintain a registry so that injured workers or other members of the public would be able to identify provider organizations. And the bill would still retain the requirement that individual counselors be certified by the department. However, it would drop the requirement for a counselor to provide a plan of operation as a counselor. The second part of the bill pertains to a regulatory authority requirement. During vocational retraining, workers are typically allowed to get 16 months of retraining and up to 16 months of wage replacement benefits or temporary disability as they go through that training. This bill would remove the requirement that insurers get our approval at the department to voluntarily make temporary disability payments if they want to extend the training more than 16 months. The bill does not change the current law maximum that limits the training plan to a maximum of 21 months. It simply removes the requirements of a director pre-approval when the insurer and the worker and the counselor have all agreed to an extension of the training plan beyond 16 months. The reason we think that's important is oftentimes those training plans are put together right before a period of training is about to start, and waiting for the regulator to review it and sign it simply just delays the process. Finally, the bill clarifies where vocational assistance appeal language appears in the statute. Changes in the law over the years have resulted in the appeal rights for vocational assistance being located in a statute that really has nothing to do with vocational assistance. This bill would move the existing appeal rights regarding vocational assistance into the statute that relates to vocational assistance, which is under 656.340. The language is restructured to make it easier to read. However, there's no change in the substance of the language. And with that, I would be very happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Schiltz? Yes, Senator Monasanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back to this first one, replacing the certification with the registry just for the providers only. Can providers game the system then? I don't know enough about vocational rehab to know that, say, someone does become an individual licensed vocational counselor and somehow be able to game the system to get payment for something that maybe he wasn't qualified for.
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, it's very unlikely. The insurers actually make the referrals of the injured workers to the vocational assistance providers, and typically they watch that very carefully, even in terms of the amounts of the billings.
Okay.
And there's also specific time limits under the rules under which certain activities must be completed.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much
for your
testimony. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2195? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2195, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2195. Senator Tucker.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2195 to the floor with a unanimous do pass recommendation.
Senator Telfer has moved House Bill 2195 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, it is so ordered. And Senator George, would you like to carry this bill on the floor? Great. Okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2195 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2197. And Jeremy, could you please tell us about this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2197 is also from the Department of Business and Consumer Services. The measure clarifies that a medical service provider not defined in statute to be an attending physician may provide compensable medical service to an injured worker for a period of 30 days from the date of the first visit on the initial workers' compensation claim. Clarifies that parties in a workers' compensation claim may resolve a medical fee dispute informally while retaining the right to request administrative review if the dispute cannot be resolved. It streamlines employer requirements for participating in the Department of Consumer and Business Services Reemployment Assistance Program. It clarifies that an employer who hires a preferred worker receives a 3-year exemption from payment of insurance premiums and a premium and premium assessments attributed to the worker. And it deletes a duplicate statutory provision regarding required contents in a notice of closure. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you, Jeremy. And once again, we'll call John Schultz. We should have just had you stay put. Please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Again, this is a streamlining bill like the other, although this one's a little broader. The first thing this bill does is similar to the bill that Dr. Sabo testified on earlier. It conforms a specific care provider time frame. In 2007, the legislature passed House Bill 2756, and in that bill, certain time frames were made consistent, including when the time period for providing medical services starts. At that time, the policy recommendation was that the date of the worker's initial visit to a provider would start the time frame clock ticking for that provider, as there are various time frames that certain types of providers have. That was done in House Bill 2756, but we discovered through the interim that the time frame change did not specify services provided by a small group of care providers, such as acupuncturists and psychologists. This bill simply makes the starting date for services consistent for all provider types to the date that the worker makes their first visit to a provider. Secondly, this clarifies an administrative review of medical fee disputes. Currently, the statute is pretty specific and states that if there is a dispute between the medical service provider and the payer of the fee, that they shall bring that dispute to the department. for formal administrative review. We think that if the parties want to resolve the dispute informally, that they should have that right, and many do, but this does confuse some parties, and we have had parties come to us and say, well, we're not allowed to do this. So we, in this bill, are proposing that we provide the parties the opportunity to resolve a fee dispute informally while retaining the party's ability to request formal administrative review if they are unable to resolve the dispute. The third statutory change is to clarify the duration of premium assessment exemption for preferred workers. As an incentive to hire injured workers, we have what is known as the Preferred Worker Program. And the Preferred Worker Program is a reemployment program for injured workers who have a permanent disability and who are unable to go back to their job at injury. An employer is provided with certain incentives to hire these preferred workers. Some of the incentives relate to the cost of their insurance premium assessment. If the preferred worker is injured on the job, the worker's claims costs are not included in the rate making process for that employer's insurance rate, nor are they used to determine the employer's experience rating. This last provision has a 3-year time limit, but the law isn't particularly clear on whether or not the time limit applies to the payment of premiums and premium assessments. We talked to the Department of Justice about this, and they advised that the law wasn't very clear on this, and so we are proposing that the statute clarify that the 3-year time limit applies to the payment of workers' compensation insurance premium assessments, and rate making. In practice, that's pretty much those are the incentives that have been provided over the last several years, and so I don't think that's one of the reasons why we didn't see any fiscal impact on this. Another change that we're recommending is to streamline the Reemployment Assistance Program employer requirements. One program that no longer exists was designed to help employers perform worksite redesigns on parts of their work settings, which required a significant long-term investment and demanded that we assure that the employer was in financial good standing or in financial condition to participate. And what this was actually a reengineering of some part of the employer's work setting in order to reduce the chance of injury as well as accommodate workers who may have been hurt in that work setting previously. In 2001, the worksite redesign program was eliminated, but the financial reporting requirements were never removed from the law. This bill removes the financial disclosure language in order to eliminate confusion that's not required as part of the preferred worker program. Simply put, it's a way to assure employers that they don't have to go through a rather in-depth process of demonstrating they're in financial good condition before participating in the preferred worker program. Finally, we're recommending to eliminate some duplicative notice of closure language that's in the statute. At the time that a worker has reached a medically stationary status or maximum medical improvement, as it's known in some states, the insurer is required to issue a notice of closure to the worker. The notice summarizes several important things about the claim. It provides notice to the worker of the medical conditions that the insurer has accepted as part of the claim. It lists any disability benefits that the worker is entitled to, and it states the worker's appeal rights if they disagree with the notice. Two separate passages in the statute address the information that must be on the notice of closure. So in other words, the notice language is dealt with in two separate passages. They're very similar, but they do cause some confusion because they're on the same topic and they're not exactly the same. This bill would delete one of the redundant statutes. However, there's a couple of pieces of that statute that we want to make sure that remain on the notice. So the department has already committed to adopting administrative rules that ensure that the notice of closure contents would include a notification to the worker that they have the right to be represented by an attorney, and also provide contact information for the Ombudsman for Injured Workers. Those two particular notice requirements are in the part of the statute that we are suggesting can be eliminated. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions about this bill? Yes, Senator Telford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any issue with doing this, the last piece that you talked about the wording on this notice, to doing it by rule versus statutory?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, no, there isn't. We wouldn't object to doing it in the statute or by rule. At the time that we were in front of the House, we made a commitment in answer to questions from the House committee that we would be happy to put it in administrative rule. As far as we're concerned, it could be in the statute as well.
Any other questions for Mr. Schultz? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 2197? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2197, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2197.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2197 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Telfer has moved House Bill 2197 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we need a carrier on this bill.
I'm asking that. We're heavy on this side. Two of them already.
Do we have a volunteer? Senator Montesander.
We carried
this bill. Okay, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2197. And Senator George, would you like to cast a vote on
the first bill? You read my mind.
Okay, so the chair will move that the rules be suspended to allow House Bill to allow Senator George to vote on House Bill 2045. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senator George, how do you vote?
Aye.
Senator George votes aye on House Bill 2045. And with nothing further to come before us today, members, we are adjourned.